next talk, which is Bootstrapping a Museum with Open Source by Arnaud, who is has a very long list of stuff he has done as open source developer, Nixos committer, window manager, maintainer, and a lot of other jobs. And yeah, they started a museum, right? Which is called ICAS, ACAS, and apparently using only open source software, mostly.
Yeah.
And he's going to show us how that works.
Excellent, thank you very much. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so thanks a lot for the introduction. So indeed, this is going to be a talk about bootstrapping a museum with open source, which means I'm going to tell you about all the technical things we've been doing to get this museum off the ground. It's not a very structured talk, it's just a wide collection of things I would think would be interesting for you guys to see. I'm fine with taking questions during the talk as well, so if anything pops in your head, just walk to the microphone and ask and we can have a nice discussion. I'll try to keep the discussion during the talk a little bit small and we'll see how much time we have at the end. So the museum we're talking about is Museum ICAS in Deventer in the Netherlands. That's the town where I live. And it's really started from zero, so the bootstrapping, hence the bootstrapping in the title. So when I joined the initiative in 2020, there was basically, before there was an idea in people's heads, and that was it. There was no money, there was no collection, there was nothing. So this is not a museum that is built up from like a rich person who wants to show off their collection or a government who puts a lot of money into a project. This is really grassroots. And in 2020, we got the okay from the city of Deventer. They were selling this large old building, which used to be a school. And they weren't sure what to do with it, and they said, okay, we will sell it to the highest bidder with the best plan. Well, we had no chance of being the highest bidder because there was no money. But there was a real estate group who were thinking, okay, we can sell nice big apartments for the top floors, and then we can give us the space for the lower floors to do the museum, and that way you can get a good price for the top floors and have a good story for the lower floors. So that's how things became real. But if you have a really old school building, it's quite a few steps before you have a museum on the ground floor. And we were very lucky to be able to start in this building. So this was a small building that used to be used for offices. And because it would be a while before we could get into the big building, the people who ran this building said, okay, you can do a like, pop-up museum here, try things out, and start building your organization. So that was a great opportunity, except it was a great opportunity in 2020. And you might remember COVID. So COVID made everything difficult, so doing this museum was very difficult, but also setting up the larger building was delayed endlessly and all kinds of things happened. But still, there was something physical, something to start building on, so that was great. So I joined ICAS when this was running for a few months. There was already one other volunteer doing IT stuff, and we were just seeing what we could do with the little means we had. So we both really enjoy open source, so we try to make everything we do open source. It's all on Codeberg, so just codeberg.org/ICAS. Have people heard of Codeberg? Yeah, good percentage. So it's like GitHub, but it's managed by a group of German people, like a co-op style thing, and it's really nice. It's for Geo underneath, which used to be called T, I think. I don't know, but it's a nice forge to host your stuff. And the first question we got is, can you give us a way to share files? Because we were getting like, I think we were 25 volunteers or something like that at the time. And can you give us mailboxes so we can share a mailbox between more people? So yeah, what do you do? We have no money, so we get the cheapest, like Pricefighter hosting, and we set up a Nextcloud and some mailboxes, and then you're done, right? So that's fine. We will get to that later, though. And the next question we got is, okay, can you get us a, can you help us get a website that's like museum worthy? Because there was something like someone made a WordPress thing, but they wanted something nice. And we were very lucky to have two art school students who made really beautiful stuff, so they could design a website. So what do you get when you have two art school students make a website? Sorry. You get a really beautiful PDF. And then, okay, that's really cool, but then you don't have a website yet. So we were like sparring, the two of us, like how can we turn these pretty pictures into something that actually works for people? And I was like, yeah, how do we do this? I'm a back-end developer type of person, so I'm not that good with CSS, and the other volunteer is a little bit better with CSS, but so I was like, yeah, do we have to make a WordPress template? That seems really complicated, huh? And the other volunteer was, okay, I can write a CMS in PHP. And I was like, okay, it's 2020, do we still write our own CMSs in PHP? This sounds like a really bad idea, and I don't even like PHP. But okay, it's a volunteer organization, and I really believe, and he was saying, okay, and I will do it. And I think in a volunteer organization, you should let the people who do the work also decide how it's done, I mean, within limits. So I was like, okay, let's go for it. Let's build our own CMS in PHP. And I've done some PHP like more than a decade ago. That was a shit show. I was actually pleasantly surprised about how this turned out. So there's a Laravel is like a widely used like framework type of thing, with which you can fairly easily build your own CMS. And this has saved us a lot of time over trying to like convince WordPress to do things for us. Because on the one hand, it seems like a bad idea, but it is so easy to just tweak things so they're exactly like how we want them. So in practice, this turned out great. So I was surprised, but happily surprised. This was also the time that Mastodon started becoming popular, so we decided, okay, we want to have a Mastodon account. But all the communication people and the social media people, they didn't know about Mastodon and didn't really want to do both Twitter and Mastodon because that was still very popular. So we wanted a bot that just puts all the things that the communications people put on Twitter, put it also on Mastodon. So there was a bot that did that, and it was like written in Clojure, and it was a really weird thing. But I was like, okay, we can work with that. And this, I had a place where I could put that on Proxmox. Are people familiar with Proxmox? Yes, yeah, some. So what do you put on Proxmox infrastructure? You can put VMs there, but you also can put Linux containers on there. And that's pretty neat. That's like Linux containers are basically a lot like OCI Docker container things. But it seems a lot simpler, actually. So a Linux container is just a tarball with the things you need to run your thing. So that seems like a really elegant way to run this bot every now and then, not have to maintain a whole VM, because that sounds like sysadmin work. And I know enough about sysadmin that I know I am not a sysadmin. Because like the way I see myself is I'm the guy on the development team that has been running Linux so long that I will touch the Linux machines until we have the real sysadmin, right? That's kind of where I am. And this was also around the time that I was discovering NixOS and Nix. And I was like, okay, let's try to package this thing as a Nix package and use Nix to build this Linux container. And that turned out pretty nice. So are people familiar with Nix? Yeah, good number of hands. So this is the script that ran the Mastodon bot that I packaged. And what's going on here, you see these curlies. So these curlies are replaced, like you know from Python and other programming languages. Something is here which gets inserted into the script that's actually going to be running in the Linux container. And what's really cool about NixOS is that this becomes basically a path like /nix/tor and then a long hash. And that long hash means it's really easy to identify. And this means Nix can figure out, based on what comes out of this, exactly the things that are actually needed at runtime to run this. So we can leave it to Nix to decide, OK, if I put this here, we need to have the HTTP, and we need to have these two configuration files, and we need to have the mastodon.bot. But we don't need all the things that are needed to build the mastodon.bot, for example. So that's pretty smart. What's also nice is the override system. So because you put the Linux container in Proxmox, you want to do network stuff, so you needed to have the HTTP. You can do it in several ways, but an easy way is to use the HTTP to get an IP. But you need the HTTP with the client. And the standard DHCP package in Nix packages has just DHCP without the client. So what's cool is you can just override this parameter, and then the package definition basically changes, which means that we can no longer get the package from the binary cache, but it's just transparently built for us with this flag. So when I build this, I say, OK, now I want my Linux container. At that moment, it says, OK, I take the current version of DHCP, and I build it, but I build it with the client. So that's really neat. Then there's some stuff around it to turn this into a tar.gz. And this is all you need to create a Linux container, which is fairly minimal. I think this turned out to be 40 megabytes or something like that, to build a Mastodon bot. And that contained, I think it's Node.js or the JVM or something. So that was pretty, I was pretty happy with that. Cool. So nowadays, Twitter is X, and X is eh. So now we only have Mastodon, so that's a lot better. We still also have Facebook and Instagram, because people are still there. Cool. So that was a fun experience. How many people are Dutch? OK, so people from the Netherlands will know the museumkaart, probably. That's a thing that you can get from the museumvereniging. And you pay basically a fixed price per year. And you can then for free enter the museums that are that accept the museumkaart. And that's a good chunk of the serious museums in the Netherlands. So of course, to make the barrier low to visit our museum, we also want to be able to accept the museumkaart. OK, so I didn't know anything about the museum sector. So I was like, OK, where is the sign with the registration form? And I do next finished, and we're there, right? Yeah, no, that's not how that works. So to be able to accept the museumkaart, you have to be a registered museum in the Netherlands. And being a registered museum in the Netherlands is something they take really seriously. So you don't have to read all the words, but there's a very, very long Excel sheet, which on 17 themes lists the things you need to do to show that you are a proper museum, like you're a professional organization, you do your safety stuff well, you treat your artworks well, you have your finances in order. And this is something you have to sort of prove to them. So you have to do an audit, and people look at the documents you produce to prove this, but they also come and check out, interview people. So this is something that they take extremely seriously, and I think that's a great thing, because we learned a lot from this process. They take this seriously, which also means it costs you a couple of thousand euros to even do the audit, because they have to pay the people that do the audit. So it's a fair, I don't know the numbers exactly, but it's a fair price. But we had no money. So, and the challenge is, like, they have to do all the work for the audit anyway. So even if you fail the audit, you pay the money. And this is not some extraction scheme. It's like just realistically paying for the time they put in doing the audit. So we wanted to make really, really, really sure that before we go into this process and pay this money, we would actually succeed in the end. So what helped tremendously was the Netwerk Digitaal Erfgoed. That's an organization in the Netherlands that basically brings together all the nerds that do stuff with heritage. And heritage is museums, archives, and museums not only art, but also history and natural museums, stuff like that. Also libraries to some extent. So that's a really wide range. And that is a really cool community. So it's really open. I was a little bit afraid that it would be like, we're new kid on the block. People would be saying, okay, what are these people doing here? They were extremely friendly and ready to share their experience. So that's really cool. So what's big in Heritage Netherlands right now is Web 3.0. So luckily, this is not the crypto blah, blah, blah Web 3.0. This is the actual original semantic web. Web 3.0. So the RDF stuff with vocabularies and using these kinds of things to tag your metadata so you can, in theory, then exchange information and combine information from different sources. So I was a little suspicious of this because, like, I dabbled in RDF and semantic web, but that's also way more than a decade ago. I was like, are these people still doing this? Does this make any sense? But that actually, in this area, it does seem to make sense. And they also do hackathons, and because they're in heritage, there's not a lot of money, but they know all the right people to get really cool locations. So I joined this hackathon, and this was in the Domtoren in Utrecht. And this is a proper like hackathon, like overnight, some teams actually not sleeping at all and building something in 2 days. And actually also sleeping inside the Domtoren. This was a really cool experience. And really good to meet so many people who know a lot about heritage. So one thing that happens in the Netherlands is the Nederlands Institute for Kunstgeschiedenis. And they, for example, make a database of all artists. So this is the ArchiD page for Herman de Vries, which is an artist. And this has a lot of information like what kind of things he does, where he worked. And this is really cool because this gives you an ID for each artist. You can fairly easily combine this with other sources through the semantic web, like RDF style URLs and stuff like that. So that makes it really easy if you want to set up a collection management system, which you need to do if you're a professional museum, to not just have a database of stuff, but to actually link it to an authoritative source like the ArchiD. So we found a really nice open source collection management system. It's called Omeka S. And because that was also already based on like semantic web stuff, it was fairly easy to do some pull requests to an existing autocomplete thing and add the ArchiD artists as a source. So now we have an autocomplete. And even if you find the same name several times, there are actually different IDs. So if you would just put a name in that field, you wouldn't know who you're referring to. Here you can actually tag it with exactly the same, the correct person. So that's pretty cool. And the fact that this is open source allows us to make these kinds of tweaks, and that's, I think that's really powerful. So then disaster struck, because this is not something you want to see on a Sunday morning. Apparently, our website was down. Okay, that happens. But because we had the email in the same account, our email was also down. And of course, this like super, super cheap price fighter web hosting thing had a management console. But that was also down, because apparently we were blocked because there had been a DDoS. Okay, fine. But there was no way to actually reach the people at this web hosting company. And when we eventually did reach them, we were like, okay, show us this information about this DDoS. What can we do to prevent this? Yeah, no, there was a DDoS, and the logs got really big, so we deleted them. Like, yeah, thanks for that. So yeah, that was a really bad experience, and that's why this triggered us. Like, eventually it got fixed, but it returned a couple of times, so that was super painful. And for us, that was the moment where we're like, okay, we need to move away from this super cheap web hosting. So we went and we started with email for that. So we went for relatively cheap hosting. We chose to move stuff to Hetzner. And I have Nginx in this picture. Most of you probably know Nginx as a web server and a web proxy. Nginx can also proxy email. So it actually understands like SMTP and IMAP and that kind of stuff. And that was really useful for us, because those shared email boxes, they're great. You just make a mailbox, you give everyone the same login and password, and it's great, right? Yeah, it's great until someone leaves the team, because then you have two choices. Either someone who has left the team has the password, which is not great, or you have to tell everyone the new password. And our volunteers have a wide range of how comfortable they are with technology. So every time you change a password, people will be calling you the next 2 weeks because the email on their phone no longer works or the email on their laptop no longer works, and it's a disaster. So we felt we needed something different. And Nginx makes that possible, because it not only can proxy, but you can also put an authentication server in between. And authentication server just talks HTTP. It's a very simple protocol. So in our case, our authentication server is just a Python script. And okay, this is the Nginx configuration. This is not something very special. It just says we have a server. It listens to, I don't know which one is IMAP and which one is SMTP. It doesn't really matter. But it says we have a proxy that does SMTP, we have authentication, and our authentication server is at localhost on port. So it's pretty easy to set up, and it's pretty easy to write an authentication server. So this is basically sort of the whole thing. I redacted a couple of details. So what it does, it's an HTTP server. I have a file with the credentials because it's fine. It has some headers where it gets the username and password, and it looks at what if they are in the credit in that credentials file. And based on that, you can say, okay, this was correctly authenticated, and I want you to send this user either to localhost or, yeah, in this case to localhost, with these credentials. So this gives us the possibility to, for the same mailbox, put multiple passwords in the credentials files, and translate that to the single password we have in the real mailbox, which is just managed by Hetzner for us. So this is a really simple solution, which now allows us to revoke a single password for a shared mailbox when someone leaves, and leave everyone else untouched. So that's that was really nice to be able to customize it like that. Of course, we want to make things complicated, more complicated. One limitation of this is that this Nginx proxy apparently cannot do SSL on this side. So that's bad. I mean, I'm OK with putting the passwords in the file. It's no big deal. But sending the passwords over the network in plain text, that's just painful. Luckily, you can just do an S-tunnel, and it will connect to localhost to the S-tunnel, and the S-tunnel will be configured to do an SSL connection to the real mail server, and that will be fine. By this time, I was getting really excited about NixOS, so this configuration is all also a NixOS service. Here we do the override trick again, because the normal mainline Nginx in Nix packages doesn't have this weird email proxying feature, because who needs this? Well, we do. But you can just enable it. And this means when I build this service, it will recompile Nginx, but with the mail stuff enabled. And this would be like a whole project if we used like a traditional Linux distro like Debian. Like, I would have to package Nginx myself, or I would have to not package it, but just install it on the server with like make install. And then what do you do when Nginx updates? That's a whole project. And in this case, when I upgrade the whole system, it will just transparently recompile Nginx again with this option. So this is like total game changer for me. Start script is kind of similar than what happened with Mastodon. So we say if if this exits, we kill everything. We start the authentication server, we start the S-tunnel, and we start this specific Nginx which was compiled with the mail proxy stuff. So this looks pretty simple, but it does pull a lot of weight. So I found this really cool. Now, we are, of course, we want to make things even more complicated because that's how it works. We wanted to have multiple backends for sending email because we have the fairly reliable mail server of Hetzner to just send regular mail. But we also wanted to send, like, sometimes you want to send a message to all of the volunteers. And by that time, we were like 50 volunteers. And Hetzner doesn't let you send an email to 50 people. It has it capped to like 10 or 20. So okay, what do you do? Okay, we set up our own mail server because why not? But do you want to use this for everything? It's a little bit tricky. So we were like, okay, we will use this only for mass mailing, and for the regular email, we will just use the Hetzner stuff. So this was this switch to say we do our own mail server for mass mailing and Hetzner for regular mail. We could put this in the auth server. So it can say, for example, if the user is IT, then I send it to port 25, the local mail server. And if it's any other sender, then we just send it with to the S-tunnel that sends it to Hetzner. So that looks easy at first glance. Except Nginx doesn't let us do that. Because the mail server on localhost didn't need authentication because it's on localhost. That's supported by Nginx. Hetzner's mailbox does need authentication, mail server does need authentication because it's publicly available. That's also supported by Nginx. But you have to configure either or. So they don't support that you have one backend that you need authentication for and another backend that you do not need authentication for. But that's something, that's just code. So that's something you can fix. It's a weird corner case. Nobody cares about this, but we do. But yeah, Nginx is just C code. I know development. I can fix that. So I fixed it. I made a pull request. But yeah, then it's draft. What do we do now? Do we wait until they merge it? No, of course we want. Of course not. We want it right now, and we can do that. So here we use another NextWest feature. So it's not an override because it's not an option that is supported. It's an attribute that we override. So the difference is maybe not so interesting for this talk, but in this case we add our Nginx patch to the list of patches that is used when we build Nginx. And again, this is transparent. So next time I build this system, it builds Nginx with this option and this patch. Well, try doing this on Debian. I wouldn't wish that on my enemy. So yeah, I like that. And by this time, I was getting so excited about NextOS that this Hetzner machine that we had, that's a NixOS machine now, so that has NixOS services, which makes us all even easier to manage. So we have. I'm going to speed up a little bit, but if you have questions, just raise your hand. So this is. It's nice to have a web email for people. So we installed Roundcube, and how do you install Roundcube on NixOS? Well, you just say, "I want this service on my machine. I enable it." It needs a host name. This also means it will do all the Let's Encrypt stuff and take care of that for me. And I have some configuration that I want to pass. And especially, I wanted to use the global address book. But that's not there by default. So I had to package this Roundcube plugin. And this is basically everything I needed to package that Roundcube plugin. And then some extra configuration. Not very important, but that's that was really easy to do, basically. Now we have this. What's interesting to tell about this? I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. So we use H for secrets management. Because everything is declarative in Nix, it's nice to just put your Nix configuration in Git, so you can track the changes you made to the system. And then it's nice to make that open source. This our server configuration is just in Git, in Goldberg, and you can all look at it tonight. But then what do you do with the secrets? You cannot just put secrets in there. Well, we encrypt the secrets with H. And that means we commit the encrypted file which holds the secrets. What H helps you with is that I can put in the H configuration, okay, these five public keys should be able to read this secret. And if I then change the secret, H takes care of signing that with those five public keys. So it's just a convenient wrapper to make sure all the people and all the machines that need access to the keys have it, and the others don't. Cool, so I like making nice small scripts. So if I have a small script, for example, to take our volunteer database, which is, of course, an Excel file, and every hour it reads the Excel file and puts out a PDF like this. That's fun, and then people can actually know and find each other. We're starting to using Nextcloud more, so not just for the file sharing, but also DEC for like task management, and also the calendar for the hospitality schedule. So at all times, we want to have two people who greet you when you enter the museum. They put their names in the schedule, and then they know who they can expect to be there. And then you can, of course, look at this iCal and make nice reports so people can see who's really active and who maybe we should talk to maybe become a little bit more active. We have monitoring because everyone wants numbers, right? One thing that was fun to monitor is also the email boxes. So I don't want to look into the email boxes because all the teams can manage that for themselves. But it's all volunteers, so you kind of want to know that actually someone is looking at these mailboxes. So we have monitoring on the number of unread mails and the age of the oldest unread mail. And that gives us like a sort of a flag that if that rises too much, we have to talk to the team, are you actually looking at this email box? This space is nice to know. I haven't told you what ICA stands for. It's European Institute for Contemporary Art and Science. So that's big shoes to fill. So we don't really think of ourselves as just a museum. That's the largest part of it. But we also want to be sort of a knowledge center. So we have a small library, which we are filling with like books that might not be interesting for general purpose libraries anymore. But this way we can keep alive the books that are within our theme. We use the same Omeka S system to manage that catalog, so you can find it online. So that's nice. Also, we try to make Wikipedia better by updating the entries for the artists that are under our that are interesting to the theme of the museum. We also have some thin clients. Of course, that's also all NixOS, because that way you can do the like kettle not pet thing, but also for the desktop systems. We use it for machines in the office, but we also use it for video as a video player in the museum itself. Cool. So a lot of time has passed since we started looking at the museum museumkaart, museum registratie. We're proud to say that we actually passed the audit in July last year, I think, I want to say. So really proud of that. We now have the nice little thing that says we are a registered museum. I never saw that thing before, but now that I know, you know that these people are serious about being a museum, and that's cool. That also means that we get a lot more visitors, because this is clearly the point where we could accept the museum card. It also meant our numbers on how many people visit the museum got more complicated. Because we used to have Zettle as a point of sale for people who visit the museum, so we have reports. But now we also have people who scan their museum card. And this information, we want to put it together, because that's useful information to look at. And of course, the Museum Vereniging has a portal for that. And that's a portal. It does not have an API. It is updated. I don't know when it's updated, but it usually takes like between a week and a month before the new numbers show up. Sometimes it's even wrong. But what they do is every day they send you an email with an Excel sheet as an attachment, telling you the cards that were scanned yesterday. So yeah, we can do coding, so we can just look at the mailbox, look at those emails, look at those attachments, and make one graph that shows all of the information of people who visited. So that was also fun to do. Oh no, disaster struck again. But this time it was fine, because we learned from the first time. We had moved the email, we had not moved the website yet, but we did set up a static copy of the site. So by that time, we could just, when we noticed this, we could just switch to the static copy of the site, and it was mostly fine. I think very few visitors will have noticed this outage. And this time it was not a DDoS, because we were actually on TV. So this is something we're proud of. Avrotros has a program, they call it Nu te zien. And we were featured there with our exhibition. And this drove a lot of people to our website, causing us to jump over some kind of limit there. But we just switched to the static fallback system, and I don't think a lot of people had noticed. So in this case, this is actually a success story and a happy ending. And with that, I want to leave you with the invitation to, if you're ever anywhere near Deventer, check out ICAST.nl, check out if this is something for you, and maybe visit if you would like it. That's it for me. If anyone has questions, please find the microphone.
Thank you.
I think I see one person with a question. I'm not sure if it's already on.
I have a question. So do your museum also have like a contemporary and time-based media art? I was like wondering if you have like any perspectives of like how artists can like maybe package their artwork with NixOS for exhibitions, because sometimes when you have like contemporary artwork, it can also be a little bit not so easy maintainable installation, like depending on which kind of like time-based media they're using. But would that also be possible maybe like to somehow for the artists to wrap their software as Nix packages, or what are your opinions on this?
So if I'm understanding you right, you're talking about digital artworks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe let's find each other offline and talk about this further, because I don't have like a short answer to this.
Hi, Arnoud, question. You set up your own mail server. So do the emails actually arrive, or do you get a lot of problems where it goes into the spam box?
Yeah, so it's reasonably fine. It's not too bad. So this was kind of an experiment as well, because I, it felt. So we're not using this for our public newsletter. So for the public newsletter, we just use MailChimp, not because we like it, but because that's a known bulk mail sender, and that will be fine. We use this one just to reach our volunteers, and it's been kind of fine, actually. In the beginning, iCloud, the Apple Mail iCloud thing had some problems, but they have actually a system where you can like write a little text like saying we are legitimate, and in our case, that indeed helped. So the experience was mostly positive.
Okay. If I can, one other thing I was wondering about. You have one mailbox. I guess it's because you don't want people to have their own email boxes, or because if you have a mail server, you could also set a shared email box next to a personal one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The mailboxes I was talking about were shared mailboxes. So, so the explicit goal was that you see each other's sent mail and received mail to be able to collaborate on that. For now, we wanted to keep the safe route and just keep the critical things in the Hetzner stuff and not on our own, like, put together mail server thing. It might be something for the future, but for now this is fine and pretty easy.
Right, because I think you had Nextcloud on one slide, but I think you can also host an email server with that, or not.
I'm not sure, but I think Nextcloud can integrate with your email server, but it's not an email server itself.
Okay.
So it will, yeah, you will have the same problem still.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Cool. Yeah, thanks.
You said you were volunteering.
Yes.
And that there was another IT volunteer. I was wondering how much time you spend on it and how the organization also appreciates you.
Huh. So I spend a bunch of time on this because it's a lot of fun. I would say some periods it gets up to a day a week, some periods it's a little bit less. Generally it's very well appreciated, but also anytime anyone has a problem with something that has either a screen or a power plug, they will try to call me. So you have to really set boundaries. But it's generally very well appreciated, yeah.
Okay, good to hear.
Cool, I think that's it. I want to thank you very much for listening, and if you have any other questions, then find me later.
Thank you.